On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Aren't you that guy everybody hates?
No, man, no.
This is Tall Can Audio. Follow along on Twitter at Tall Can Audio or at Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio.
Just do it!
How's it going, everybody? Matt Robinson here with you in the TCA studios here in beautiful by town, Canada. Good show for you today. Going to be joined by Arden Zwelling from Sportsnet to talk a little Blue Jays. Nice to have a little baseball back on the diamond. I don't know if anybody else caught it, but there was a televised inter-squad game Tuesday night. Yes, that's how desperate I am for sports. I'm willing to watch inter-squad games on TV. But really glad Arden's here to talk a little baseball and what's about to happen, whether or not we're going to get through this, and who might be surprising at Jays camp so far. So really happy he's here. If you're not doing so already, please make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, wherever you're hearing this right now. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Pods. We're an iHeartRadio station, you know, those annoying commercials. We're one of those guys, so you can subscribe there if that's your thing. Definitely make sure you're subscribed, because Monday, July 27th, as we have been promoting around here, TSN's hockey insider Bob McKenzie will join us on the show. He doesn't do a ton of these, so you're going to want to make sure you check it out. We're going to do a deep dive with Bob on all kinds of different things. So that's Monday, July 27th. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. We're really looking forward to sharing that with you. We are on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. With all that out of the way, let's talk some baseball with Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet. Pleased to welcome into the show at this time from Rogers Sportsnet covering the Blue Jays, Arden Zwelling. How are you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate you making a little bit of time for us. I know baseball is approaching being back up and running. What did you manage to keep yourself busy with while things were shut down?
Yeah, it's approaching, we hope.
Yeah, exactly.
They get this thing off the ground. You know, it's the last few months been good. It's like work never really stops for us, right? You know, we still got to churn out some content, even if there are no sports occurring. So still been writing a bunch and podcasting and radio, and we're doing video hits from our kitchens and things like that. So, you know, that stuff never stopped. But it was good to just kind of be in the city during the spring. Usually I'd be traveling around, whether it's with the Raptors or the Blue Jays. So being here and getting to kind of enjoy, you know, my backyard a little bit and, you know, barbecuing and doing some of the summer stuff that normal people get to do during summers when I'm, you know, like I thought about it on Canada Day, right?
Yeah.
And for the last 8 years or so, I would have been at Rogers Center covering a ball game. But instead, you know, I was hanging out and barbecuing and like enjoying a holiday. It's been the same thing with weekends. On Saturdays, I'm not racing down to the Rogers Center anymore. I'm out in the backyard and having beers just like everybody else. So that has been nice, but it is coming to an end soon.
That's a good segue. One of the ways that we normally lure people onto the show is by we normally have a couple of craft beers and chat about those while we're talking about whatever. My listeners have been telling me I need to start asking the guests if they're into the craft beer scene at all. And so I'll put that to you. Is that anything you're into? Or?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
What are your you got a go-to brewery or anything down there?
There's so many good ones in Ontario, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a go-to. I really like Collective Arts.
Oh yeah.
In Hamilton, there I you know, everything I try from them I enjoy. They made like probably one of my favorite beers I've ever had, and they're not making it anymore, which is like the most tragic thing. It was their surround sound, which I guess is, it's like a, they just do a small batch of it and then they change the recipe going forward. So this was, in the spring and winter. And it had a mix of hops that were, I don't know, they were called like Centennial or Enigma or whatever,
sure.
Like these crazy names. But it was like an incredible beer. I loved it. And I bought like right before it went out of kind of production there, I ordered 24 of them actually.
Nice, yeah.
I just liked it so much. So anything by Surround Sound, or excuse me, by Collective Arts, I generally enjoy.
Yeah, it's one of the worst parts of the industry, right, is they have these seasonals and stuff that don't always show up. I had one in... there's a brewery in Port Perry called the Old Flame Brewing Company, and they had kind of a brown ale called Raven, and they only made it like twice a year. And so, yeah, you'd have to stock up. I think now they've actually put it into their regular rotation. But yeah, some of these, you just find them and you just discover them, and they're like, it's gone for 6 months, or we're not doing that anymore.
But it is cool that there is this culture of microbreweries who are trying different stuff and, you know, creating some small batch beers. Like, I don't mind paying more per can in order to get something like that that's of high quality and that's interesting, that's different from everything else on the shelves.
Yeah, it almost becomes like a hobby, right? Instead of just going out and grabbing your case of Bud or whatever you were going to do, you try something different every weekend. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I love seeing that creativity from some of the microbreweries around Ontario. So there's no shortage, right? Like Great Lakes is another great one that Octopus Wants to Fight is a good, I'm a big fan of that one.
I think I've tried that one. It's pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I always have that on hand. Nickelbrook, another brewery I really like. And actually right near where I live in the east end of Toronto is a place called Left Field, which obviously there's the kind of the baseball tie in there, but the beers like are solid, really, really good IPAs, which is always what I'm looking for. So there's no shortage of options.
No, for sure. One of my guys who normally comes on here to talk about the Raptors, he's all about the Left Field. I guess he lives like two blocks away, so he's in there all the time raving about their stuff. So I know you are recently, now they've opened the doors up here back at the Dome, and have you been down? I assume you have.
Yeah. I've been there just about every day since they opened it back up. I'm back to just real life.
What's the vibe like down there? It's got to be a little bit strange and keeping people separated and nobody, obviously no fans in yet, but they're just practicing. What's it been like being back in the building?
Yeah, they've done a really good job, I think, of setting everything up for us to be safe and to be separate. There's a whole bunch of protocols that we're going through right now, even just to get into the ballpark. You know, you do a questionnaire in the morning online that clears you to actually go to the building, so they're asking you about symptoms and, you know, where you've been and things like that. And then when you get there, you're getting temperature checks, you're getting another questionnaire in person with an individual, your bag's getting wiped down, everybody's wearing masks. And then when you go up to kind of the modified press box that they've set up there on sort of the 200 club level,
right,
you're very separate from everybody. Everyone's got their own hand sanitizer and their own tub of disinfectant wipes, and everything's being disinfected every night. And so I feel super safe going down to the ballpark, like not only because, you know, we've done a good job of mitigating the pandemic here in Ontario, but because of a lot of the protocols that the Blue Jays have put in place.
Do you think, I mean, there's got to be an answer coming soon. The opening day is pretty soon. Are they going to be allowed to play any games up here, or where do you lean at this point on that?
The information on this is, you know, constantly evolving. So I don't know when this is going to be released, but we
tonight
we might sound might sound outdated even by tonight.
Yeah, but, true.
The club is they're definitely optimistic that they're going to get clearance to play at Rogers Centre in Toronto. There is just so much red tape that they have to go through as far as getting clearance with three levels of government, but most importantly, the federal level and public health officials who are going to want there to be a very robust and very thorough and detailed plan as to how you're going to pull this thing off, as there should be, because you are traveling back and forth between the United States and Canada, the United States being the raging epicenter of this pandemic. And there, you know, as I mentioned before, we've done a great job here in Ontario of really mitigating the virus and containing it. So you don't want to introduce something into our environment here that could be a danger to public health. And it's not just the ball players, right, that we're talking about here. It's the grounds crew and the security personnel clubhouse attendants, food and beverage people. It's the people who are going to be working at the hotel at Rogers Center, and the people who are going to be working on the buses and planes that the teams are using. So like, there's a lot of individuals at play here and a lot of possible vectors where things could go wrong. So, you know, the Blue Jays really have to prepare a very thorough document and protocol and plan to present to the government that they're going to withhold, or if not that they're going to, it's just rules that they're going to play by throughout the season. And then they have to follow up as well and actually follow those protocols. Sure. So I think part of the delay also is just the is public health officials and ministers just watching to see how training camp goes and to see how closely protocols are followed. And if there are any issues, how MLB's testing rolls out and what the turnaround is like and how often people are being tested tested and if there's any issues there. So,
and there has been. You,
right? That's valuable information as you make a decision and go forward and try to choose what's best in the name of public health.
I've been pretty vocal on our little show here that I had no issue at all with them running training camp at the Dome, right? You could bring guys in and for a couple weeks they could stay at the hotel. They're pretty isolated from the rest of the city and it wasn't a big deal. I have huge concerns about flying into other cities and all the other teams that are going to be cycling through. Just with you having been around it, you've been talking to people a lot more, certainly. You've now been down to the Dome. Do you think it's workable, or do you think that this is something that the Canadian government should be maybe putting the brakes on?
It's a thorny issue, right?
It really is.
You don't want to be perceived as giving special treatment to the wealthy and privileged, right? And there's not much essential about a baseball player, really. And you know, while you've got the precedent with the NHL exception that was granted, that's contingent on the players staying in their hub cities.
That's right.
There's not going to be travel back and forth. So you add travel, and you really do increase your risk of something going wrong, which is, you know, why I think the Blue Jays are going to have to come up with such a thorough and detailed document that covers off for every scenario and every situation that might play out. I do think that it is doable if all players and staff buy in and follow the rules and quarantine at Rogers Center and don't go out to a patio or go out to Rabba or what have you. Mm-hmm. And if the franchise and the league uphold what they say they will do in terms of testing and providing PPE and disinfecting everything and following distancing rules and all that. Like, everybody has to follow the rules. And obviously, for the players and the staff who are quarantined, there are some like pretty stiff penalties as far as the Quarantine Act goes that they could be in violation of if they did leave their quarantine bubble at Rogers Center. But there needs to be some accountability as well on the league side. And we saw, you know, early in the testing process, as you mentioned, there were players who said they had not been tested in 7 days. There was slow testing turnaround. You had teams putting off training sessions because they hadn't gotten results yet. Obviously, the Blue Jays had a little snafu with a player testing positive during the intake process and then having had direct contact with a number of other individuals. And that meant that 12 Blue Jays were held back in Dunedin when the rest of the team came north to begin training camp in Toronto. So like everything, it's going to be impossible to get everything done perfectly by the letter of the law, but everybody needs to do their best to get as close to that as possible for this to work.
Last thing on this, cause I want to ask you about some actual baseball, but,
We never talk about baseball anymore.
Yeah, I know. we saw over the weekend, Travis Shaw put out a couple of tweets that said, you know, we were told we would isolate here for a couple of weeks during camp. We weren't told it would be potentially the entire season. I could see it working where other teams coming in to play the Jays, you know, they don't really maybe take issue with, they get on the bus, they come to the hotel, and they stay quarantined there. Is it your understanding that would be what the Jays have to do as well? They'd be looking at doing that for a couple of months instead of getting to go home in between games? And
yes, that's been my understanding the entire time. And I think there was a bit of confusion on the player side, which surprised me. a little bit. Although, I mean, they, you know, players have so much to worry about when they're, you know, getting ready for the season, and a lot of kind of the logistical stuff and those things they leave up to management and agents and general managers, and they try to put that stuff kind of out of their heads. So maybe I'm not surprised that there was that miscommunication. Maybe I am, but during the regular season, players would have to stay quarantined every time they enter the country.
Yeah.
You have to, see a 14-day quarantine, and you have to abide by that. And there is legislation, there is the Quarantine Act, by which you can be punished by a fine of up to $750,000 or even imprisonment, which, look, nobody's gonna lock up Travis Shaw.
No.
but if a photo surfaces on the internet of a Blue Jay on a patio or at a grocery store or whatever, there's gonna be repercussions for that. So throughout the season that would have to be the case, unless there was an adjustment made to the schedule wherein the Blue Jays played a really long period.
A 2.5-week home streak or something.
Right.
Home,
it would have to be longer than 14 days.
Yeah.
And at that point, they could leave quarantine. But then as soon as they go back to the United States for an away series and come back to Toronto, they're going to have to quarantine all over again.
Down
as
on the
they
field.
Should.
Yeah, no, I'm. I agree with that. I don't.
Public
this isn't something.
Is at play here.
I don't want the government to bend too much on this. I think, like you pointed out, we did a good job here. Let's not be jeopardizing it for sports. We've seen now some intra-squad games down on the field. I guess the first guy I want to ask you about, just because he's been the big story here lately, is Austin Martin, the Jays' first-round pick, has showed up. We've seen some grainy video of him taking ground balls at third. He's got a pile of hype behind him. I know the Jays were excited to get him where they did. Do you think there's any chance at all we see him this year?
So I'm not saying never about anything with this season, because, dude, if you had said to me in late February, early March, the MLB season was going to be 60 games,
right,
and there would be no fans in the stands and no designated hitter, like, we would have laughed and laughed and laughed, right?
For sure.
I will not say never about anything, but it is extremely unlikely that Austin Martin plays for the Blue Jays this year. He obviously does not have a professional plate appearance or a professional inning in the field. And if he does play for the Blue Jays this year, that will be his first professional plate appearance, because there's no minor league season this year. You know, the big focus with him right now is just getting him back up to speed, because he played only 16 games before the pandemic shut down the NCAA season. Mm-hmm. So he really hasn't had live reps or been up to baseball activities since early March. So that's going to be a bit of a process. And also just figuring out where he fits best in the field, you know, where his hit tool is at right now, whether there's any kind of tweaks or adjustments the Blue Jays want to make there. So I am certainly not expecting him to play for the Blue Jays this year, and I don't think anyone should. But I'm never saying never this year, especially.
That being said, with him now in the fold, Groshen's also, you know, they've got some pieces coming along. Was the addition of Austin Martin being added to the organization, if not the team, part of the impetus to move Vlad over to first when, you know, it's spring training? Obviously, they hadn't made that pick yet, and we were still seeing him at third. Do you think there's any relationship there, or?
No, I think that was just a purely Vlad decision. Like, that was based in that vacuum. I feel like we spend way too much time talking about positioning in Toronto. Where is this guy going to play? How is this going to fit? How are they going to figure that out? Like, it always takes care of itself,
right?
Whether by injuries or poor performance. After Devin Travis joined the Blue Jays and, like, tore the cover off the ball and hit 300 for whatever stretch of time that was, mm-hmm, people would have said, oh, the Blue Jays are good at second base for now. Like, they're not going to need a second baseman anymore.
Right.
And Devin Travis currently a free agent.
Yeah.
So, like, these things always take care of themselves. And I think, actually, in a perfect world, Austin Martin becomes the type of player for the Blue Jays that, like, a Cody Bellinger is for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Okay.
Or a Marwin Gonzalez or a Ben Zobrist, you know. So on Monday, you're playing second center field. And on Tuesday, you're at third base. And on Wednesday, maybe you start the game in left and move over to center. And then on Thursday, you're back at third base. And you are able to field an optimal defensive lineup based on the tendencies of your pitcher and also based on the swing planes and, you know, hit profiles of the opposition lineup. And the big benefit, you guys, that Austin Martin's bats in the lineup every day. So I don't think the Vlad moving over to first had anything to do with Austin Martin. I think it more so was because, A, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s conditioning just has not been where it's needed to be throughout his MLB career. B, he was the worst defensive third baseman in baseball last season, statistically, like empirically the worst. So even if he made huge, massive, dramatic improvements, he might get himself up to just below average or average. It's such a steep hill to climb. And see, I think that this gives the Blue Jays the best chance of being competitive in 2020 in a 60-game season, because you get your best defensive lineup on the field at all times in a season when every error and every ball that skips under a glove or throw wide of first base is going to be that much more impactful and consequential. You get your best defensive lineup on the field. You let Vladimir Guerrero Jr. focus on hitting, and we know he has the potential and the ability to carry an offense for a couple of weeks. And you hope he focuses on that and is able to do that for you and win you a bunch of games in a season when you might only need, I don't know, 34 or 35 wins to make the playoffs.
I think that's a good point, that every week, every game, every inning is going to matter. With that in mind, there probably should be no doubt that we would see Nate Pearson on opening day's roster. But there are contractual issues at play there. Do you think he has to wait, or would you give him the green light on day one and say, we, you know, let's try and make sure we get every game we can?
I would give him the green light. That's what I would do. Is that what the team is going to do? Not necessarily.
Right.
And in my opinion, the best thing, not only for the Toronto Blue Jays and their competitiveness in 2020, but the best thing for Nate Pearson's development and his future as a productive major leaguer is to have him in the rotation from opening day and pitching against big leaguers and continuing to learn how his stuff plays at the big league level and get that experience and get those innings under his belt. Like, I don't think there is a developmental case you can make for leaving him at the alternate training site for 7 to 10 days at the beginning of the season. But as you alluded to, as we all know, there is the obvious contractual issue there. And if this decision was made in a vacuum on paper, like if you were playing a video game, 100 times out of 100, you trade one start of Nate Pearson in this weird 60-game season for an extra year of contractual control 6 years from now.
Right.
But the other thing that has to be considered is that this CBA is going to be renegotiated after 2021, and service time and contract time might look a lot different after that. You know, you might not be a situation where, you know, you have control over a player for the first 6 to 7 years of their career. We don't know that.
Right.
And the Blue Jays have to play by the rules that they know now and the contract stipulations that they know are in place today. But it might all be moot after 2021. We'll see. So if it was up to me, I absolutely would have him in the rotation from opening day on.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced the Blue Jays will do the same.
Yeah, it's not your millions, I guess, in a couple of years that it could cost them. What do you think then with, you know, the rotation looks like on day one? And I'm curious too, do you think that is Grichuk going to be the everyday center fielder, do you think, when we get to start this?
Yes, I think Randall Grichuk will be the everyday center fielder to start the season. The Blue Jays are obviously committed to him contractually. They believe that there is more in there to show. And, you know, in a weird 60-game season like this, some of these streaky hitters that the Blue Jays have, like Randall Grichuk and Teoscar Hernandez and Brandon Drury, hitters that, you know, the fans, it raises their ire because they see the slumps so often, right? But part of being streaky is you go on these amazing hot streaks.
Yep.
So if you got second half of 2019 Teoscar Hernandez, if he does that over 60 games, he's an MVP candidate.
Right.
Randall Grichuk can, like, look at his home run numbers over the back half of 2019. I mean, if he goes on a run like that, I mean, he could lead this team in home runs easily. You know, Rowdy Tellez and Brandon Drury, similar guys who just go on these streaks. And if you get that streak at the right time during a 60-game season, it can really change, you know, it can turn your fortunes around. Now, the other side of that volatility, obviously, is it could be a miserable 60 games. It could be the
cold
valley,
side, yeah.
Right? You don't get the peak, you get the valley.
Right.
That's certainly possible as well. But I think the Blue Jays believe in Randall Grichuk and will have him in center field. And as far as the rotation, Hyunjin Ryu is your opening day starter. Matt Shoemaker is going to pitch behind him. Then Tanner Roark in the three hole there in the rotation. And from there, I would expect Trent Thornton to claim that fourth spot. Chase Anderson would have had it, but he's got an oblique issue.
Yeah.
He's coming back from it pretty quickly, but he's against it to be ready for opening day. So I would think Trent Thornton in there. And then your fifth spot, could see Ryan Barucki, could see Anthony Kay, could see both. Could see a piggyback scenario where you get kind of three innings of one, four innings of the other. And you know, eventually after 7 to 10 days, I think Nate Pearson should slot in there.
What has the report been on Ryan Barucki, who, you know, has had some injuries that he's had to battle through, but seems like he's got some good stuff. Like, how's he looked down there so far, do you think?
We've seen him pitch once and he looked great. Looked like himself again. And he said he felt like himself again. And he said that he feels healthy and strong. His arm isn't bothering him. Of course, he said those things in the past when his arm has been bothering him. So it's you take everything with a grain of salt. But he looked good. And he is confident, the club is confident that he's going to be able to get things back on track here. Like, it's always going to be a question mark with his arm and his elbow and his durability, frankly, because we have just seen it time and again where he has just had so much trouble getting healthy. And I don't know if there needs to be an adjustment in terms of his workload or in terms of the way that he trains, how many pitches he throws in bullpens. You know, there's all kinds of player tracking devices that you can use now to measure the amount of the tax on an arm and how far you're pushing yourself between outings. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's an adjustment that could be made there. We're also seeing an adjustment from him this year where he has shortened his slider into a cutter. He says he thinks that it'll play much better off of his fastball and help him set up his changeup better. And I think that's true. If he can attack hitters inside with that fastball and that cutter, he'll have that down and away with the changeup all day, and he can get lots of swing and miss out there, weak contact. It's also possible, and I am speculating, but it is possible that the slider that he was throwing was causing him some discomfort, because he has said in the past that the pulling motion on the slider has sometimes been what has caused that elbow discomfort, and it's generally the last pitch to come back from him after an extended rehab. So I wonder if they shorten that up just to put a little less tax on that elbow. I don't know. But he has looked good so far, and look, everybody roots for the guy.
Yeah.
Because it is, like I mentioned Devin Travis earlier, it's Devin Travis-esque. Like, good guy, very friendly with us in the media, always available. Fans love the guy when he's on the mound, a real competitor. Him and Danny Jansen have a really great relationship, work really well together. So you want to see him do well.
From your distant perch up there in the 200s, who has anyone else stood out to you in terms of this guy maybe looks ahead of schedule or better than we expected, or maybe somebody struggling a little bit? Anyone else stood out to you?
Jordan Romano stands out to me, and I've been like banging the drum for this guy for years. Like, he's got a huge fastball, big time wipeout slider. Like, I think he should be facing leverage out of that bullpen in the back end, like, right away. It's closer stuff, and he did pitch as a closer in college before being drafted by the Blue Jays, and they tried to make him into a starter, tried to get him to learn a changeup, and it didn't go so well. The changeup is such a hard pitch to master, and now that he's back in a relief role, I mean, he has looked tremendous, and I think he should be facing leverage for this team. Santiago Espinal is a fun player. He came over for Steve Pierce in that deal at the Boston Red Sox a couple years back. And he's just kind of like this Swiss Army knife of a player that you can play him at short, second, center, left, whatever. And he is super quick, super athletic, fast twitch muscle kind of guy. He can make some special plays. There was a crazy double play that he made on Tuesday night at Rogers Center. The people might have seen it because we were broadcasting the game, but you know, him and I'm trying to remember who he turned it with, but they were shifted over to the left side of the infield. So they basically had to turn this double play all from the left side of the base, and he made this insane running jump throw, relying on his athleticism to carry him through, and made this crazy double play. So like, that's a guy that I think is a perfect fit for the Blue Jays taxi squad, which they're going to carry with their team. You get three players you can take with your team at all times to kind of fill in for last minute injuries or COVID replacements that need to occur. So that is a guy that, you know, I think is a perfect fit there because he plays so many positions. And then Thomas Hatch should be the final name that stands out to me. Starting pitcher, came over in the David Phelps deal, the Chicago Cubs last season. He's got really, really cool stuff. Pete Walker said the other day that his stuff is quietly electric. And it's true because he doesn't jump off the page.
Right.
He doesn't stand out to you. it's not front of the rotation wipeout stuff, but when he pitches, he is very effective, and he's started using his changeup a lot more recently, something he wasn't doing with the Cubs, and he rode that to some great results over the back half of 2019. Also finally got healthy after dealing with some shoulder inflammation, so that's also a sleeper at camp that I would look for.
Last one for you then before we get out of here. I know now you mentioned a broadcast on Tuesday night. There's going to be another one here on Wednesday night. The fake crowd noise. I'm perplexed by a little. It's got to be strange for people who aren't familiar. It's not being done on the broadcast. It's actually in the building being pumped in, so the players and everyone in there can hear it as well. When I first had the game on the radio, it almost sounded normal, and I almost thought maybe I was overreacting to the fact that I don't really like it. But once I had the game on TV, and you can hear this noise, but there's no one in the stands, I found it more distracting than maybe the fact that there wouldn't have been any would have been distracting. I know they're trying. What is it like down there? Do you think the players prefer it? Do you, you know, what do you think of it?
It's funny how you get used to it, because they are like kind of playing it throughout the entire game. And so it is just kind of this low murmur,
right,
this kind of hum throughout the stadium. And I didn't actually, I got so accustomed to it that I didn't notice it until the game ended and they turned it off.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, something just left us.
Right.
So it's interesting how accustomed you get to it. And then they've also been adding in like extra noise when, say, Bo Bichette walks to the plate or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does. Like, it's interesting how they have been changing the volume of it for sure. Certain players. And they also did this thing on Tuesday night, which I don't really understand the point of. Like, they had stadium employees holding signs down the first and third base line, but in a building as big as Rogers Center,
you
have 10 guys with signs, so it just looks ridiculous. It's not, you're not really recreating anything for the player here. So I think I'm in the minority here, but I'd actually prefer like no crowd noise.
I would too.
No PA announcements. I don't want any of that stuff. So I'm a big UFC fan, and I've been watching these fights that they've been putting on without crowds.
Great.
Isn't it incredible?
Yeah, you can hear the shots landing and the coaches. It's been awesome.
You hear when a shot is cleaner than others, right? Yeah. You hear when something gets through. And yeah, hearing the corner instruction and hearing like the fighters bantering with each other has been like so illuminating and so cool to watch. And maybe it's just because it's different from what we're used to.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm sure that as an athlete, you would rather have a crowd to feed off of.
Oh, for sure.
Because you get a lot of adrenaline from that. So I'm sure that you would prefer to compete with a crowd. But just as a spectator, I much prefer no crowd noise, being able to really lock in and focus on the game and pick up some of those little details and some of those things that are happening on the margins that we generally miss because it's so loud.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. And I understand why maybe the players and the managers wouldn't necessarily like that. But as a fan, I think it would be great. Arden, really appreciate you making a little bit of time for us. For those who haven't checked it out yet, I'm sure most baseball fans have if you're into podcasts, but with Ben Nicholson-Smith, Arden also has a terrific Blue Jays podcast called At the Letters. Would highly recommend that, as well as his work at sportsnet.ca. Again, really appreciate you making a little time to talk some baseball with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, hey, thanks, man. When's my beer show up? When do I get that?
We will definitely get those going again in better times.
Can't wait, man. Thanks so much for having me.
There he goes. Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet covers the Blue Jays, as well as a few other things. They keep him pretty busy down there, as he mentioned. And that podcast, again, if you want to check it out, it's called At the Letters. And it's Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith. Probably my favorite baseball podcast. So obviously they're a focus on the Blue Jays, but certainly news from around MLB as well. Would highly recommend it if you're into such things. You can check that out. Really appreciate Arden making some time for us. Some interesting stuff there. I'm not really sure yet, and this is going to happen quickly, as he mentioned, right? We were hesitant to talk too much about the Canadian government thing and what's going to happen, because literally at any moment we're going to get word on what happens there. So let's not go too deep in on it, but his take on it and just, you know, whether those players are going to be willing to be quarantined for 2 months. And everyone got all upset at those tweets from Travis Shaw that, well, if you don't want to stay quarantined, then you don't play here, don't be here. I get that. And I also understand the Canadian government side of it. I support it. You can't be having all these guys flying into the U.S. and then back and walking around Toronto. You got to maintain the quarantine. I get it. But put yourself in those shoes. If you are one of those other 29 teams that's just coming in for the weekend to play three games, whatever. I'm sure they'll be fine. They'll stay in the hotel. And, you know, there's a restaurant in there. There's a bar in there. Like, it'll be fine. I'm sure they'll be able to maintain that, or I'm reasonably sure they'll be able to maintain that. If you're asked to live there for 2 months and no one else in the league is having to do that, everyone else on the other 29 teams after the game, they're going home. They don't have to quarantine because they're not in this country. So I get it. I'd be frustrated. I don't know if that's something I would want to do. He has the option to opt out. Maybe he'll take advantage of that. Maybe other guys will. I don't know what you do here, because I absolutely do not want the Canadian government to soften their stance. But at the same time, if I'm those Blue Jays players, I get it. We got to stay in this hotel for 2 months. Everyone else has got to do it for 3 days. That's a tough ask. And it's different than what the NHL and those guys are doing, because when you get eliminated, you can go home, certainly. And also, there's no travel, right? Everyone is going through the same thing that you are. So there's no competition difference. There's no, you know, the things that would start to get to you maybe. So I get Blue Jays players would be frustrated with this, and maybe would even prefer, probably not Dunedin, but maybe would prefer to not be in Canada, where at night they can still go out and whatever. It all depends on your perspective, how seriously you're taking the virus, all these sorts of things. I can see both sides of this. And to me, it means if the players won't respect the quarantine, then you can't do this here. Maybe they have to go to Buffalo. Maybe they have to go to Dunedin. And I'm fine with that. But I certainly see the player side of it too, that we're being treated differently than everyone else. And I kind of get the frustration there. So that's going to be the interesting part of this to follow, I think, is what this means for Blue Jays players and how that's different than everyone else, and whether or not they're prepared to go through that. And I wonder if once we get word from the Canadian government, if they are allowed to play here and teams are going to come into the dome all the time, but the Blue Jays will have to stay quarantined there for the full 2 months, I wonder if there isn't a sudden flood or whatever of Blue Jays that opt out of the season and go, yeah, no, this is, I'm not doing this. And they have that right. There's no punishment there. There's no fines. There's nothing. You have the right to do it. If the, if the circumstances aren't to your liking or up to your standards, you can opt out. And maybe it's as simple as, yeah, I didn't sign up to be away from my family for months at a time like that. I'm going home. And quite frankly, it would suck as a Jays fan to be losing top guys to that, but I'd understand. I think it would make some sense. So, anyway, let's wrap this one up. Don't forget, Monday, July 27th, Bob McKenzie from TSN will be on the show. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you're listening to this so that you can check that one out as well. We've got all kinds of other great stuff coming up as well. We're on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. Once again, my name's Matt Robinson. This has been the Tall Can Audio Podcast, and we'll see you all on the next one.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching TallCanAudio on your favorite podcast app.